I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And we were just, well, we actually spent the last 20 minutes ahead of the show's recording talking about discounted hard drives, which it turns out is a lot more interesting than you might think, assuming that you think it is incredibly boring, because it's not that boring. But it is fairly boring.
It's not boring. It's not boring if you are a geek.
Which I
Who
am.
Who is this show for?
Well, this is the question that we ask ourselves on a weekly basis.
Flipping supermodels, is it? I mean, I'm not saying that supermodels can't be geeks, but it's not primarily for supermodels.
If our surveys that we do for our listeners is anything to go by, we have a total of zero supermodels listening to our program, which is a shame. But it also proves that you are very likely to be correct.
Well, they might be trying to fly under the radar, I suppose.
They might be. But they've missed out on a massive saving on 16 terabyte professional hard drives. And that's their loss. That is
assuming that they would be patrons.
Well, I'd like to think that they would be. Certainly, I feel that all of our patrons are incredibly photogenic and
well,
beautiful.
Well, John says, speak for yourself, Ian. Which I think is fair, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is fair. Well, it's been a fair week, and although not as interesting as some weeks, certainly more interesting than others. I think that's a fair way of just making sure everyone is prepared for this run-of-the-mill run of story. No, I'm kidding. It's actually been a really interesting week.
It's been fine. We've got some good stuff to talk about today.
There is. Well, let's pick the first one here. The Telegraph wrote this week that Amazon has started installing cameras with artificial intelligence that monitor delivery drivers inside its vans. It's in the UK specifically. It's using two cameras to record footage from its Amazon branded vans. So that's not the ones that drive around. That's basically someone in his car who, side note, the other day had obviously brought his kid with him. Because the delivery of whatever the package was, although I could see in the car, was driven by an adult, the actual delivery was given to me by who I assume was his son, or at least someone's son, who he'd gotten permission from.
What, so like a youngster?
Yeah. As in, my voice hasn't broken, my daddy's too lazy to get out of the car level child, yeah.
Wow.
He was very sweet. He was like, here's your package.
And that can't be allowed, surely.
Well, I don't know. I remember when I was in Rotherham having a paper round. This was when I was, God, how old were I? How old are you when you do a paper round? 10?
You're asking the wrong man. I did mine up until I was like 25 or something.
All right. 9 or 10. I do remember there were at least a few days where I got my mum to drive me around because either I was being lazy or the weather was bad. Or both. Probably both.
Fair.
Anyway, that's that. The fact is, it's not going in those cars. It's going in the ones that have the Amazon Prime logos on the side. And they will look out onto the road, as to be expected, perhaps, but they'll also look inside the cabin. This is, again, according to the Telegraph write-up. Now, they're meant to detect dangerous behaviour. This includes hard braking, speeding, driver distraction.
Isn't hard braking kind of sort of the opposite of dangerous driving? I mean, if you're hard braking, it's to surely stop you from having an accident.
Potentially, but it could also just be you're trying to get through the red light and damn, it changed too quickly, slam on the brakes. Anyway, it sends you voice alerts if you breach these standards. That's the thing. So it's AI. It's not just filming you. It is also monitoring your
driving. Does it use Alexa's voice?
Don't know what noise it uses, but the cameras are... apparently, they are supposed to switch off when the ignition's off of the car. And drivers will receive scores, apparently, for driving safely. Now, this is all about the UK, but this rollout isn't without precedent, in a way at least. Amazon's been doing the same in the US for about a year, maybe a little longer if you include a trial. And I did some Googling on this just to find out exactly what's been going on. There's a Vice article I found from February of last year, that's 2021, if you're listening in the future, which reported that Amazon was using a system called Netradyne, which is the most dystopian name of a company I can think of for a monitor.
It sounds, if that like came up in a video game or movie, you wouldn't think twice about it being an evil corporation, would you?
It's Deus Ex or something. And anyway, it's called Driver Eye, which is driver and then the letter I, which apparently will help, quote, improved driver behavior through, quote, audible driver coaching. Indeed, lols at the ready. Driver Eye is activated by multitude of signals. I'm going here off this Vice article again. Links in the show notes, uktechshow.com. It triggers the surveillance system. That's things like your speeding, failing to stop at a sign, hard braking, as we mentioned, acceleration, seatbelt compliance, U-turns, stuff like that. Then videos of those infractions are uploaded, and that is then potentially monitored. I don't think it's real time. I don't think anyone like Amazon can just dial in and watch someone driving in real time. However, there's another report. This is from March last year from Reuters, which had an account of at least one driver quitting directly as a result of this because he'd been told he either had to sign his consent or seek other work, which isn't great. I dug up a comment that Amazon had from last year at the time, who says, Netradyne, I'm going to summarize because actually it's a bit tedious. Netradyne cameras are used to help keep drivers and the communities where we deliver safe. She said they piloted the technology between April and October 2020, and they saw a lot of improvements. Accidents were down 48%. Stop sign violations were down 20%. Driving without a seatbelt decreased 60%. And driving while distracted decreased 45%. And then she also had a line, and I'll read this verbatim. Don't believe the self-interested critics who claim these cameras are intended for anything other than safety. That is kind of like walking up to someone.
That's fighting talk right there, isn't it?
Well, it's like walking up to somebody and saying, hello, my name is Nate. I'm not a murderer. How nice to meet you. All you think is, Nate's a murderer. Because why would you say that otherwise? Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, they're bringing this to the UK, and it's not gone down very well with drivers in the US, but they are still doing it, and it has made things safer. The question is, of course, Ian, and the reason for talking about this, is if this was in your work environment...
Yeah.
Would you be comfortable with it?
No.
No.
Absolutely not. I mean, why would you be? I mean, even if we discount anything that is safety related, I feel like, you know, if you're in a car driving, you do have some right to not be watched. Like, it, you know, you might mutter to yourself, you might sing, you might have a break where you sit at the side of the road and eat your lunch, or you might call your wife or whatever. You know, I feel like these are all things that no employer has any right to see. And I just feel like that alone is enough of a reason not to do it. Also, Amazon drivers are not well paid. Why are they spending probably millions and millions of dollars on this kind of technology and not just simply paying drivers properly and making sure they're well that they've maybe done an additional driving test or something? They could set something up internally and make sure that everyone they're hiring is a good and safe driver. Like, you know, why not just use this money rather than creating dystopia to actually make things better for people?
Well, one of the, I mean, your comment is in line with some of the criticisms that I saw of this, which is that the reason that maybe some drivers are not obeying all the rules they should is because the pressures placed
in a brush
upon
all
them
the time
is so great that they have to cut corners, literally and figuratively, perhaps.
Yeah.
And this is a response to that.
You see it all the time. Like, you see, I mean, it's, and this is not limited to Amazon. I've seen all courier companies' drivers do ridiculous things. Like, not necessarily dangerous, but, like, they'll park badly because they've got 2 minutes to get out of the van, find the package in the back, get to your front door, get an answer out of you, hand the thing over, possibly take a photograph of it because that's the way the world is now, and then get back in the van. So I've seen it happen near my kids' school. And, you know, this is during pickup time. So it's kind of dangerous and it's inconvenient because there's not a lot of space and there's already a lot of people driving to get their kids, you know, causing chaos. And it's because they don't have enough time. All of these things are, you know, Amazon cheaping out, basically. They don't want to spend more money on drivers. They don't want to pay the drivers they've got sufficiently. And they don't want to invest in, you know, making sure that drivers are doing their job well, like, you know, maybe random checks where someone comes out with you for the day. The other thing is, why does this need to be camera based? Like, why can't you have, as you know, if we accept that sudden braking and overspeed is a problem, why not just have a box that tracks that? It doesn't need to be cameras, does it?
Well,
it could just be data.
Some of it isn't to do with metrics that would be picked up by in-car telematics. It's things like attentiveness and are you yawning a lot, is your seatbelt on, you know, things like that, where it's probably easier to get a good reading from a broad selection of vehicles to shove a camera in it that knows what a seatbelt or a yawn looks like. I'm making those examples up, but
those are probably good examples
than it is to fit every vehicle with a specific system. Like that sort of system works very, very well when it's fitted by a manufacturer because they know the exact specifications of a car.
But you're aware, right, that all of that information is available on the ODB2 bus and is used extensively by insurance companies who have those black box systems. I mean, obviously, you're right. There's no detection for yawning in those things. But again, you know, why is a driver yawning? Probably, well, overworked.
A couple of other things that I found during my little research on this, and neither of us would profess to be experts on this technology, but it's interesting.
No, but I am the world's greatest driver.
and I don't drive at all, so, yeah. You know, I'm the worst kind of critic in a way.
One of us is a liar and one of us doesn't drive.
Exactly. This technology is not uncommon in haulage, in big haulage systems. I found loads of examples of haulage companies installing systems, not necessarily with the same level of sophistication as the one Amazon's using, but certainly comparable.
With
as
cameras,
far as
though?
With cameras in the cabin with the driver and outside. And not just one, but if you do a Google search, I mean, I was expecting to have to really dig around, but I didn't. I did a very, very brief bit of Googling and just found loads of companies, loads of haulage firms in the UK, lots of people criticizing them, certainly, but lots of haulage firms saying, look, these are actually really useful for several reasons. One of the things that came up as a reason for installing these, and again, this is something that may be a bit more specific to Britain, it may be not, but I found this from it's not an insurer, it's the ABI. What does ABI stand for?
Association of British Insurers.
Yeah, exactly. It was basically about insurers because they were saying that this crash for cash scam is significantly on the rise, not caused by Amazon, not caused by couriers, not caused by haulage necessarily. It's a lot of the time it's a vehicle crashing into another vehicle to try and claim on the insurance in some way. And so some of the reasons why companies are investing in these camera systems is to basically have a better defense that it wasn't their driver's fault when this happened. That's one of the reasons for this coming up. There's no evidence that that people are crashing into Amazon vans to try and steal the stuff, although I suppose by saying that I'm now suggesting that there could be, but that's not what I've seen written about. But I do wonder whether very broadly this isn't just about driver safety and things on the Amazon side, but it is also just the increasing risk that is posed by having non-specialized vehicles carrying around often very expensive and high quantities of very expensive goods, and that you know, you've got to do everything you can to protect that. I still personally would be of the view that if I was driving these cars and I'm under high pressure and someone came to me and said, right, we're going to install cameras, visual light cameras in the cabin, is that okay? If not, by the way, maybe go and find another job. Yeah. I'd be pretty annoyed. But then going back to my original question about this, to bring it back to something that we at least have some experience with, is how much are we all monitored at work anyway? Because certainly...
You're supposed to be told, aren't you, though, if you're being monitored?
In Britain, I mean, we have basically the highest density of CCTV cameras anywhere.
Sure.
Not an excuse, but it is just simply a fact. And in an office environment, certainly a very large corporate office environment, you sort of always have to assume that anything you do on your computer is being monitored, not in real time by a person, but by some form of machine.
That's definitely true. You know, every website you visit, you know, most things like that, you know, what presumably what apps are loaded at any one time, that kind of stuff. But you also sort of you accept a certain amount of it, but it's not the same as your company. And companies have tried this, turning on your webcam all day and recording you, or screen recording literally whatever you're doing on your laptop.
Yeah, which is not cool.
You know, those things are different. I don't mind, you know, my company looking at what I'm looking at on the internet, or, you know, other kind of metrics like what time do I log in the morning, what time do I shut down in the evening, you know, that kind of stuff. I may have a problem with that. I don't have anything to hide, I guess. But also, I think that's reasonable, especially in days of working away. And also, they have a duty of care to make sure that people are not doing things on work computers they shouldn't be doing. You know, that's not problematic. But, you know, as soon as you start to throw in cameras, I start to feel like it's too much. It's just too much.
Well, if you have a view on this, and we very much welcome any opinions from people who work in haulage or who drive for Amazon, or if you've been approached to be informed that you're going to have this installed in your van, do please let us know. hello@uktechshow.com. as ever, if you want to talk to us anonymously, do just mark either not for publication or anonymous on background, or what have you. Send that to us. We're going to include all the links to the stories that we've talked about today in the show notes at uktechshow.com/episodes. Look for episode 277, which is this week's episode. Last week, I said it was 277. It wasn't. It was 276. This week, it actually is 277.
The BBC is going to have to make significant changes to its output to meet a budget shortfall. We've spoken before about government proposals for the BBC, but as it becomes clear that the corporation won't be getting any more money for the foreseeable future, its Director General has started to talk about cutbacks and how the BBC will look. The oft-used phrase "digital first" has emerged, which is utterly meaningless in this day and age, but along with it came suggestions of killing a number of digital products. The big news is the end of CBBC, the channel for older children, and the end of BBC 4. Both channels from the digital era. They will both go online only, just weeks after BBC Three returned to the airwaves after a long period of being iPlayer only. Also set to end are BBC Radio 5 Live on medium wave and Radio 4 on long wave. The former is probably a no-brainer, while the latter is a bit more troublesome. Radio 4 long wave is, of course, home to the shipping forecast, which is used by mariners to keep an eye on the weather at sea. Also closing will be Radio 4 Extra, which is basically an archive channel for Radio 4. The BBC will also seek to make the BBC News Channel and BBC World more aligned, eventually planning one global news product. In an all-hands staff meeting, Tim Davey, the Director General, set out plans which will save a projected £500 million a year to cover what the BBC says will be a £285 million funding gap by 2027. The changes will also result in the loss of 1,000 jobs. Nate, I don't know about you. I don't know what saving you can make by shutting Radio 4 Extra. That seems particularly ludicrous to me, as it's basically just MP3s on a server somewhere, presumably a little bit more complicated than that, but you get the idea. I could build it for them for £2,000.
Isn't radio... Yeah, but I mean, we live in a world where people will spend millions on a logo, you know. You can't trust people.
Yeah.
With spending money.
Yeah, well, the BBC spent some money on a logo that I hate, so they could have just not done that.
Yeah. The one that stands out to me here is BBC Four. I mean, it's by no means the most popular channel on the BBC, but it's not really the death of BBC Four, right? It's the death of it on Freeview and on cable.
This is the problem. Like, CBBC, you could make the argument that parents are a bit younger, they're a bit more savvy, they're used to finding stuff on the online. Kids of that age are very used to YouTube, can easily find stuff on CBBC and iPlayer if they want to. That makes sense. BBC Four is an older skewing channel that is, I wouldn't say exclusively, but at least in part watched by people who aren't perhaps the most technical. They're normal people who have an interest in documentaries and things of that nature. You know,
I will just throw out there that BBC Four is my favourite channel. And I would get rid of all other BBC channels before BBC Four.
I mean, that is a perfectly reasonable statement. I think you'll find a lot of people are probably very passionate about BBC Four. I think they're going to struggle to shut it.
But they're not shutting it, are they? It's just they're going to stream it online.
But that's not the same. And that has just been proved by BBC Three. So I don't know what's going on. I mean, obviously, I do know what's going on here. This is... You can't even play the rant music, can you?
No. Well, not at all.
This was always the plan. Is, you know, the more you starve the BBC of money, the more it has to cut, the worse it ends up looking in the eyes of the public. I've already seen tweets from people going, oh, shutting CBBC. Oh, well, I'm not going to pay my license fee anymore. That's one of the things I like most. It doesn't matter that it's going online. People don't see that. They don't care. All they see is that the thing that they use and trust to keep their children happy during the day is going to be going somewhere else and not in a way that necessarily they're happy using. BBC Four, a lot of people who use that are the heartland conservative voters, I would say. You know, the people who listen to Radio 4. That's a bad move. That just reinforces what everyone's been told, that BBC is a bad value for money. Now, I can't blame them for any of this. It's not their fault. It's the same as it isn't their fault that the free license for the over 75s went away. You know, that was a decision by the government not to continue funding it. And also, I will say, a lot of over 75-year-olds are a lot richer than a lot of 25-year-olds. So this constant wanging on about that really winds me up. And there's a lot of other stuff happening as well. They've got an ambition to reach 75% of BBC viewers through iPlayer each week. There are a few bits and bobs in here that... local journalism. Yes, of course you can.
Can I pick one out here? Requesting Ofcom remove regulatory restrictions on iPlayer to expand box sets and archive content. That to me seems very, very smart because iPlayer is sort of in competition with itself in a way because it's hobbled by its own... what am I trying to say here? Basically, it could put all the content that we all want on it, but the only reason it can't is because there is an existing regulatory stipulation that it has to only live on demand for a set period of time and then has to go, and there's currently nowhere else for it to go under the same model as the iPlayer. That's partly why we have BritBox here, which I do really like, although don't use, which maybe that means I don't really like it. I don't know.
I like the idea of it. I'm not going to pay for it, though.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas iPlayer, lots of stuff on there, but it's the archive content. There is so much stuff on the BBC and others have made that is available nowhere, certainly nowhere legitimately. Old episodes of things like Dragon's Den, just pulling one popular thing out of the air.
Or EastEnders. Why can't you watch every single episode of EastEnders?
Yeah, it's stuff like that. And there are other issues on occasion to do with rights and what have you, but those notwithstanding...
Yeah, Dragon's Den's not owned by the BBC, that's a terrible example.
Fair, but you know what I'm saying here is that there are issues that could be very easily resolved.
Well, also, I will... I'll give you a bit of historical context as well. The BBC was forced into shutting a lot of its own production down because there, you know, there was a furore again in the 80s or 90s, which resulted in producer choice, which meant that BBC would use a certain amount of third-party production. And that's supposed to be good. That's supposed to stimulate the economy. But that results in things like Spooks not being owned by the BBC, but being owned by whatever they're called, Endemol, or whoever it is. I think it's Endemol. You know, that is problematic. And I think if you want the BBC to compete, as that stupid bint says, with Netflix, then your solution to that has got to be, well, then the BBC needs to tighten up its how it deals with programming, and it needs to move away from that model where it's only licensing things. And if the BBC commissions something, it has to own the rights to it. And that, you know, there might be, maybe they cut production companies into some of the profit or something. But if the BBC was ever to try and make Netflix, it wouldn't be able to, because it doesn't own a lot of the stuff that people want to watch. And you'll see that when you see stuff on Netflix. Like, I can't remember, I watched something.
Well, I was going to throw something in here,
yeah,
because
go.
There is, I just watched the Prehistoric Planet series on Apple TV Plus, which is a co-production, and it's BBC Natural History Unit that makes it. It's David Attenborough doing the voiceover. It's basically Planet Earth 3, although it's more of a prequel. It's more like Planet Earth minus one sort of thing. It is, without question, one of the best things I've seen on Apple TV.
Nice.
It is definitely one of the most enjoyable documentaries I've seen this year. Photorealistic dinosaurs. It's basically the
my son's
animation,
very keen.
The animation team that did a lot of the work on it is the same team that did The Lion King, the photorealistic Lion King.
Oh, really?
And I'm not kidding. It is so good that the visuals. It's probably the best CGI I've ever seen. And the fact that it is also David Attenborough is another thing. So, yeah. Slight side plug for that. It's only 5 episodes. We watched them all this week. It was absolutely wonderful. But it just made me think, well, that is a, you know, it's a big budget production. It's got Apple obviously behind it, but it's still BBC Natural History Unit.
Well, they're the best at what they do. That's why. It's the same.
So why can't the BBC make more money that way?
They could. I mean, that is a distinct possibility. I mean, it's a very well recognized brand. It could do extremely well. iPlayer could be launched globally. If the license fee goes away, why not? Like, because it's the license fee payer that holds that back. It's the fact that the BBC can't do a lot of the stuff that it does in the UK outside it, because it's seen as a, you know, license fees funding it. So if the license fee goes away, then yeah, why not have iPlayer as a global subscription service? I imagine it would be phenomenally popular. And maybe that is the answer. Maybe that will bring in far more revenue than the license fee does. I still don't agree with it, because fundamentally I believe that the public service remit of the BBC is more important than that. And you know, it's there's so much expertise at that company. It's such a shame. You know, like you said, the Natural History Unit is one of the best. It's probably the only thing of its kind. Like, a lot of people have tried to make natural history documentaries, and a lot of them are very good, but they're not, they somehow lack that thing, that magic that the BBC brings. And I think it's true of, you know, things like radio as well. Like, this, you know, the amazing fact that BBC Radio sounds better than literally every commercial broadcaster, and is set up in a way that's far more competent, I would say. You know, there's so much to it. And, it, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit, and it's not really what this particular thing is all about. But I think it's a great shame that we've come to this point, really.
Okay, so devil's advocate. I remember we talked a lot about when BBC Three was being moved online. Being iPlayer only, and we talked about all the great things that came out of BBC Three, relatively great things, that is to say, things that are popular that people enjoy, but as we've said before, you can't trust people, they'll watch any old crap.
Well,
but there is some decent stuff that came out of BBC. Players, can I finish?
Yes, of course.
Okay, I finished.
Have you actually finished?
No. We talked about that, and then it went back to terrestrial. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe this is just going through the motions, and eventually in, you know, 2 years' time we'll have this conversation again on episode 377 about how oh, isn't it great BBC Four is coming back to terrestrial? But the fact yeah. is, I don't care where it's being broadcast, because I personally, like, and like a lot of people, don't have any kind of terrestrial TV.
I have a broadband
connection, well, and everything is on demand, or if it is being streamed, it's being streamed via something like the iPlayer. So it doesn't matter that it's going off. All I care is that there is money being put into the productions themselves that are being made available. And from what I can tell from this announcement, that's not going away, at least not directly. So in a sense, it won't affect me, and therefore may not affect people listening to this sort of a show.
They will fight to keep the things going. I mean, you know, the usual stuff of cost savings has been mentioned. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's plenty of middle managers at the BBC that aren't strictly necessary. But again, I'm reluctant to say that, because I think the operation runs very well for actually quite a small sum of money. Like, you might not think that the best part of £3 billion is a little amount of money, but if you, you know, imagine what Netflix is bringing in, you know, it's kind of like, that's probably a month for Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah, but look at that. Yeah, but look at what happened to Netflix. It's tanking now and it's having to cut back. So yeah. Just, you know, stick with it, BBC. I have another yeah. thought, though.
Yes, go on.
I've recently really got into a show on BBC called Antiques Road Trip.
Okay, yeah.
It's a great concept. What it is two antiques experts get, much like you and I, get given £300 yeah. and they travel around a part of the UK buying antiques. And then at the end of each episode, they auction the antiques, and then their total money, assuming they make a bit of profit on each of them, goes into the next episode, with which they buy more antiques and so forth, and they do that over 5 episodes until someone makes the most money. Now, if you just made all TV programs a bit like that, then you could actually have the shows themselves working to fund the BBC.
Yeah, because they, well, you know, they end up buying the Mona Lisa or something.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like that thing where you start off with a pen and you end up getting a house.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few steps in between.
Well,
but
sure,
yeah.
Yeah, but it's like ?, and then profit.
Yeah, just do, yeah, just do that. Just be better.
Yeah.
Go on, Ian. Final thoughts.
I'm just
gripping stuff.
I'm just kind of frustrated. You know, I think some of this makes sense. I think some of it doesn't make sense. Maybe, like you said, the reason some of it doesn't make sense is because it won't actually end up happening. There'll be sufficient petitions to save CBBC that they'll give in and go, okay, fine. And BBC Four could probably survive online. And Radio 4 Extra is unnecessary, arguably. And shutting down medium wave, like, I mean, there must be a big saving from killing off those transmitters and not using medium wave or long wave anymore. So, yeah, you know, I mean, maybe they'll do it through just moving to the 21st century a bit more. I'm worried.
Mm. Well, if you're worried, let us know. Hello@uktechshow.com. Be good to get some feedback and opinions on this. Ian and I, it's one of these topics where we broadly agree with everything each other says, which doesn't necessarily make for the most diverse conversation. So if you do have a contrary view, feel free to fling it into the mix so we can debate it on next week's show. Hello@uktechshow.com. Couple of bits of feedback I wanted to get to here. Christian emailed in after hearing us talk about Uber's subscription model the other week, and that's coming to the UK. We'd asked if anyone in the US had used it, and if so, let us know whether we should consider using it when it launches here. Christian says, "Hello, Ian and Nate. I am a United States of America native, currently living in the heartland, Alabama, and I would like to speak for all Americans when I say that no, the Uber subscription is not worth it. Side note, I appreciate the segment regarding penguins. It has been far too long since a tech podcast has covered Antarctica's national animal, yet I did find the actual story somewhat cruel, since it's known that the reason one doesn't normally see penguins in Great Britain is because they are scared of whales." Lol.
Such a good email.
Very good joke. Very good email. Thank you, Christian from Alabama. Craig wrote in with an extremely nerdy email, which means we have to read it. It's in response to something that was on the full version of the show last week that Patreons heard regarding HDMI cables. In fact, do you want to read this, Ian? Because you talked most sure. about HDMI.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with HDMI specifications, but in the data center world, I work in the high performance computing industry, the length of a passive copper cable is very limited. At 200 gigabits per second, cables are limited to 2 meters, which is just about long enough for a run within a rack. Beyond that, the more expensive fiber cables are required. I've changed job and I'm not working with rack layouts anymore. But as we go to 400 gigabits and 800 gigabits per second, that 2 meter limit is expected to get even shorter. Kind regards, Craig W.
Brilliant email. It's exactly the kind of email that I love receiving, which yep. is incredibly specific, very, very nerdy, and yet somehow genuinely interesting, which we should really print that on some napkins and give them out to people who listen to this podcast. Thank you, Craig. Thank you, Christian. Let's have a quick listen to what's been happening in the wider world of Tom Merritt, or rather the wider world of tech via Tom Merritt. Really ruined this link. So
you want to have another crack at it?
There's just no point. Let's just... I can see Tom waiting.
You could end up cutting it anyway.
Here he is.
Oh, hello. This week on Daily Tech News Show, Erin Carson shares her findings on whether tech will wipe out humanity. It's a definite maybe, but there's some hope that tech could save us from tech. Erin does a good job of explaining it. Also, we play judge on two potentially useful implementations of NFTs. One is for booking a hotel. We dig into why Microsoft gets to track you on the DuckDuckGo browser when nobody else does, document a significant step toward widespread air taxis, and Allison Sheridan helps us figure out how to pick a trustworthy VPN. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you very much, Tom. Insightful week in tech news this week. That's it, Ian. We're done. I think we'd like to thank people for listening. Thank you for listening.
And if you listened live, double thanks for putting up with the technical shambles that it turned out to be. We'll fix that. I found an app.
Yeah, we have had a little problem with the live show this week. Hopefully it's still been massively entertaining, as I believe it always is. But nonetheless, thanks to everyone, no matter how you're listening, free, Patreon, well, they're the only two options, so it's one of those two, and we hope you have a rather lovely week. We'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.